Hey, it's JD here, and I really hope you're enjoying the countdown so far. I want to tell you about something special we've got going on, though. Every year we do something called a pod list. It's a podcast playlist where I solicit you, the listener, to create your favorite pavement jams. That's right, if you are musically talented, or even if you are not, get your band together or pick up your fucking acoustic guitar and jam your fucking balls out. That's what I want. From there, take the WAV file, email it to me at jd@meetingmalchemist.com or send it via WeTransfer, and Bob's your uncle. That's all it takes, and you will be on the Meeting Malchemist pod list 5. And now, on with the countdown.
Previously on the Pavement Top 50.
Loretta Scars. Alex from Portland, how are you feeling about Loretta Scars?
It's a great song. I've got all kinds of thoughts on it, but, it's on Slanted and Enchanted, which is a great album. Slanted and Enchanted is the least varied album, in my opinion. Like, most of the songs on it are kind of one vibe, and this is definitely no exception. I think it's a great vibe, and I enjoy it.
Hey, this is Westy from the rock and roll band Pavement, and you're listening to The Countdown.
Hey, it's JD here, back for another episode of our Top 50 Countdown for seminal indie rock band Pavement. Week over week, we're going to count down the 50 essential Pavement tracks that you selected with your very own top 20 ballots. I then tabulated the results using an abacus, a bicycle pump, lotion, and some biscuits for Kevin, my hallmate from uni. How will your favorite songs fare in the rankings? Well, you'll need to tune in to find out. So there's that. This week, we're joined by Pavement superstar, Bob fucking Nastanovich. Bob, what is up?
No, okay, cool. And yeah. Aren't you a Toronto person?
Sure am.
Yeah, how are things there?
Bright blue sunny skies today, about 5 degrees Celsius. So that's like spring weather for us, especially in February.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
We've got, I don't mean to show you up, Jamie, but it's 63 degrees Fahrenheit here with a light breeze and a bright sunshine.
Oh, man.
Here in Paris, Tennessee, you know, like a typical winter day here is kind of gray and 44. But it's especially nice today, which is pretty awesome.
That sounds about right. That sounds like good, you know, good walking weather.
So, yeah, how are you doing all right with this project?
So far, so good. I'm like people are lining up to do it. I'm caught up through March. I've got to do some interviews this week with people. So basically, people seem to be like, I was like, I don't know how people will respond to a top 50 that they have to listen to every week. But I don't know. My numbers are good and good for me, you know?
Yeah, they'll get into it.
Yeah, I think so. And like just a little bit of water cooler debate, right?
What's that, bud?
Just a little bit of water cooler debate.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, what if you fucking thinking? Greenlander was 46, and, you know, people were really pleased that it made the top 50, but then there's another cohort that are like, that's crazy. It should be at least in the top 30, you know, or whatever, so.
No, that is so weird. I mean, I don't, I do know people that love Greenlander, and I ineffectively insisted on trying to get it played live in Iceland.
And, oh, that would have been cool.
Yeah, and we sound checked it, and it sounded just fine for about 70 seconds, and Malchemist was like, I don't want to do that one, you know, and then with him, you know, his attitude was so sterling in 2022 and 2023 that you don't, and he was willing to play so many, different songs. Because in the past, like specifically in 2010, I just think it's, I mean, I remember his attitude back then was sort of, it's going back to a more juvenile style of songwriting for him, which is more direct, but I guess maybe it kind of reminded him of certain aspects of his life. Even, I mean, especially the earlier stuff pre-Steve West, seems to give him a certain amount of actual PTSD, which is a
get out
word I never use in self-reference, just because of the stress caused by Gary. Like I sat next to him when we watched the screening of Gary's documentary, and he did not. I mean, it's a great documentary. Have you seen it?
I did. Yeah.
It's a great documentary, and I don't think they really could have done a better job. And I mean, I would have been wildly pleased with it. I know Gary was.
So cool, you know, that he got to see it before he passed, at least, right?
I can't believe he lived that long. I mean,
no way.
You know, I mean, I mean, for him to make it to 70 should give us all belief that we can do it too. but he comes from really supremely great genes in terms of longevity. His parents lived well into their 90s, and for some reason, despite every possible attempt without actually attempting suicide, he basically tried to shorten his life.
Oh, man.
I mean, he was just...
What was it like when you first met him, Bob? What was that situation?
Exactly like every other time I met him. I mean, at first he was kind of suspicious of me because he was suspicious of me because he thought that I was like a friend of Malcolm's who could probably drum and was there to replace him. So for the first, until a day or two in, we practiced in his parents' house the first time we went on tour in 1990. And when I say practice, I think we only had 12 songs, and we only played 6 or 7 shows, I think. And, you know, when he realized that I couldn't play drums, he...
he relaxed a little bit.
I mean, I think he realized that I was there, like, kind of carry gear and make things happen and drive, and then...
You do more than that, dude.
I mean, back then, I actually...
There's this je ne sais quoi that you bring.
Well, yeah, I mean, I developed my role over the years. It's hard for me to really accept my overall importance. But back then, there were some shows, you know, shows back then were 45 minutes or whatever. And there were some shows where if he was on, I really didn't have to do a thing but sort of stand there. I mean, it was strange. I mean, there were times where I would actually be like, pretty embarrassed because people in the audience must have thought, you know, why does the guy who doesn't do anything have to stand on the stage? And and then also after the first time we toured Europe in 92, and it was, we played like maybe 28 shows in 31 days or something, and we finished in Belgium somewhere, and Remco was doing our sound for the first time.
That far back he goes. I didn't realize that.
He goes back. The very first night we met him was about 5 o'clock on the day that we opened for My Buddy Valentine and Superchunk at the Old Ritz in New York. And
what a lineup.
Yeah. And he, we played for 25 minutes and we played 7 songs but whatever. So we met Remco outside the Old Ritz. We were on a label called Big Cat, which was run by this rather scurrilous fellow named Abbo, Stephen Abbott, who was in a band called UKDK. And as it turned out, he was actually kind of a thief, but he knew Remco because Remco had worked with the band Cop Shoot Cop. And so he kind of figured that this young Dutch kid should do sound for us because we needed a sound man, because we would turn up in a lot of places and we'd be so disheveled and disorganized and unprofessional that local sound staffs would be like, who are these assholes? You know what I mean? Like back sure. then in the 90s, if you didn't sort of show up, I mean, if you showed up, at least in the manner that Pavement did, a lot of these people, you know, you were really at the mercy of people who, you know, hypothetically were into Soundgarden, and if you didn't sound like them, then you could fuck right off. And if you didn't bring that some level of professionalism or panache, then you could really get the shaft, because people would just be like really annoyed that they had to work with you. And that's really what it's like when you have to depend on the house, unless you've got one of those rare situations where they give a crap.
Right.
So
from that point on, you guys were on the road with Remco.
Yeah, pretty much 97% of the time. Like in 2010, like those one-off things in North America, we wouldn't fly them over. Bob Weston did sound for us a few times. Now we've got this guy named Aaron Mullen, who did a few shows this year. I mean, it's just, if it makes no sense financially for Remco to come over for a short stint, I mean, obviously doing sound for Pavement's not rocket science, but Remco was proved his effectiveness generally at festivals. He's pretty passionate about making sure the bands he works for sound good, because it's big time ego gratification for him. If people go around and say, you guys sounded really great, so he's very competitive in that regard, which worked in our favor.
Yeah, sure did. You guys sounded great at the festival I went to, the Primavera in Porto. That was a fantastic show.
Yeah, I'm happy that Barcelona didn't sound very good, because Remco didn't come to the practices, had trouble getting his visa, so he was completely unprepared for Barcelona. He didn't really even have Rebecca turned up. Then a lot of the stuff that I'd learned, because she's in the band now, which I hadn't done before, weren't even turned on in Barcelona. And then in Porto, I'm not sure if you're aware of it, but I showed up for sound check, and the bright blue case that had all of my bits and bobs of percussion, some of which I'd had since the early 90s, got stolen. So,
are you fucking kidding me? No, I didn't know that.
No, I had no gear. I had no gear. I didn't even have anything to mount. I didn't have a tambourine that you can hit, and I didn't have anything to mount it on, and I had no tambourine, maracas, cowbells, whistles, all my tricks and claves. And thank goodness that Rebecca was in the band, because at first Rebecca was just going to kind of come out there and do keyboard parts and either come and go or just kind of sit there. And she's a really good, I mean, she's a great drummer and she's a really good percussionist. So I said, no, you're going to do something on every song. And then we, you know, quickly found out that she can do background vocals on anything, and
that's great.
She can scream, and obviously, and she's also a very joyful performer. And she was, you know, she's a good, very good percussionist. So thankfully I was able to use some of her stuff, that night. but it was still was not my stuff. I mean, it was very, very, it would be like, if guitars got stolen from a guitar player. I mean, it happened to Dinosaur, I think maybe in Porto, Dinosaur Jr., all their guitars got lost and they were still in Italy when they played.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So they had to play, I think they bought guitars.
Fuck.
You know,
that's
so whatever. I mean, I'm happy that it was me, because if it had been like anybody else, then they probably would have had a harder time. I mean, I was able to just.
You kept it cool.
I'll just wing it. You know what I mean? Like, it was funny because nobody, you know, people, you kind of realize the level of how, you know, the immense level, you know, of your bandmates, they're kind of focused on their own deal. Like, they couldn't deal with that. My bad news. only Rebecca could, you know. I mean, she's great.
Really a neat addition. Like, really, from the Fonda show. I went to the Fonda show. That was just, it was mind blowing. That was my favorite show of the tour. Like, and it was the first one.
I can see why. I mean, it was long. If you're a big fan, we played tons of songs and it sounded fine and it was small and the atmosphere was good. And I mean, at least 90% of the people in there were way into the band.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, it was kind of an ideal time to see Pavement, because we were fresh off the shelf and in a mode where we kind of had to give everything a go.
Yeah, it was tremendous to be a part of it and experience it. One thing I wanted to talk to you about was Rebecca Clay Cole and, you know, her contributions, I suppose, to the overall Pavement experience. Like, is she sort of a permanent member at this point? Is she coming to South America? I mean, of course she's coming to South America, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. No, that's it. I mean, right now that's it.
Sure. Sure. It's 2024. You guys have been on the road for 2 years, man.
Yeah. We haven't done anything though for a long time. We haven't done anything since, Cincinnati. And, it's going to kind of be interesting, because one good thing about South America is we don't obviously haven't played there. A couple of the places we've never played, and we've only played 3 shows down there ever. So we can just, you know, basically play. We don't have to learn 70 Pavements, relearn 70 Pavement songs. You know, not that they're immensely challenging, but at the same time, you know, I basically could make the 4 set lists now, and, you know, it's not going to be, you won't be hearing Greenlander.
No.
You go with the
essentials, not the deep cuts.
Yeah, and I think I made a list of 32 that I sent out to them about six weeks ago.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That sounds all right. Well, if I come into any money, I'll see you in South America. But
let us know.
Yeah.
Yeah, let us know. I you know, times are tough.
Well, should we talk about track number what is it? Track number 33 on the countdown?
Okay, that's pretty good.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Hey, this is Bob Nastanovich from Pavement. Thanks for listening. And now on with a countdown.
33.
You better find your way out. You better learn how to run. You better walk away and leave the angles for the shills. Well, I've been thinking for days about the means and the ways. that I could hate all I touch. I know you're my lady, but I could trickle, I could flood a voice. Coach taught me to sing, he couldn't teach me to love. All the above. Easy talking, border blocking, transport is a the grandma police set me up with your knees. Walk to Baltimore and keep the language off the street. Well, I'm of several minds. I am the worst of my kind. I wanna cremate the crutch. I know you're my lady, but phone calls could corrupt the morning. Surgeon's warning, pillars of ace.
Okay, that was Transport is Arranged from the fourth record released February 11th, 1997, Bright in the Corners. It's the third track on the album, and it's the sixth song from Bright in the Corners that is on the countdown at this point. So Bright in the Corners is representing the bottom portion of this top 50 so far. Bob, what do you think about Transport is Arranged?
Jamie. I just think that, first of all, it's cool to hear that Bright in the Corners, got a lot of action and a lot of love. It is a very listenable Pavement record.
I love it.
And, I think Transport is Arranged, when the record was made in Kernersville, North Carolina with Mitch Easter, was just kind of viewed, and the feel around it was that, okay, that's another song that definitely should be on the record, but isn't the kind of song that it, you know, maybe should be a single or something like that. It was just a song that was like really solid and good. And then as the song got played over and over again on tour and over the years, I think it's become rather clear to me that you know, aside from kind of the more bubblegummy songs on the record, like Stereo and Shady Lane, that it would have stood up as a truly special Pavement song. And I just think that it's, for the most part, an outstanding example of Nolly Stevens' songwriting ability and composing, but I just think it's an unusually good set of lyrics.
I'm with you. I'm with you.
When I think about like verse 3, I swung my fiery sword, I vent my spleen at the Lord. He is abstract and bored, too much milk and honey. Well, I'll walk through the wilderness with nothing but a compass and a canteen setting the scenes. I mean, it just got this certain depth. Of course, you know, I am the worst of my kind. I want to cremate the crush. It's funny, some people think that's crutch, but it's I want to cremate the crush actually has a lot of personal importance to me, because that's an expression I used to use.
Really?
Cremate the crush. That's actually, I would actually say that that's a valid lyrical contribution from my notebook that was usurped by Malkmus, which was, he was more than welcome to do that. Cremate the crush was often used when one of your mates had, regardless of gender orientation, had fallen really, really hard for somebody, and it became clear to yourself and everyone around that it wasn't going to work and that was a really bad idea. And so you had to pull your friend, and that, believe me, that happens whether you're, you know, no matter how old you are, you know, sometimes you just, I think we've all seen it in our lives. We've seen people that fall really hard for the wrong person, and rather than just sit back and watch them go through a very vile heartbreak, an effort needs to be made to cremate the crush.
Wow.
And that's the expression that I used. All right, man, like, this is ridiculous. Like, because you see it all the time. Like,
yes.
Obviously, amongst my dude friends, like, dude, man, you're really barking up the wrong tree there. You know what I mean? Not
yeah.
for whatever series of reasons. But really, Transport is arranged as that song got played. There's a really unusually good version of it. Really good recording and filming from an Italian show that we did. That's on YouTube.
Oh, I'll have to look that up.
Malkmus had really, really short hair. It was this really strange festival that I believe was somewhere in the vicinity of Venice. And it was one of these festivals that you turn up to in the early afternoon, and the people are still like kind of making the stage, and you're sort of like in the state of disbelief that any concert's actually going to happen there today. Like, and that this was the vibe. We were just like, whoa. You know, because usually it's like, you know, the Heineken banners are already up, and like, you know, the kids are already listening to, you know, a band that sounds like Green Day, and, you know, people are drinking, or you see the tent village. This festival, it looked like they'd gotten the days wrong, and it was going to like happen 2 or 3 days, but somehow they whipped it all together. And we played a very memorable version of Transport as Arranged. And, you know, it pretty much became a staple of our live show from the Bright in the Corners tour forward. It's just has a good mid-tempo vibe to it. Good lyrics, good guitar.
Love good the tone drum. Of his voice. The tone of his voice is really like in a sweet spot.
I agree. I just think, to me, it's just like a great Pavement song. It's always really relaxing, kind of in a grounded sort of way, but like even more relaxing. And like, yeah, I mean, some people, you know, at times think that Pavement doesn't rock, and then when we actually do rock, we're just like pretending to be hardcore or pretending to be like jokey metal or something like that. I actually feel like Transport is arranged, if it's like played with a proper punch, like kind of is a truly a rock and roll song. So,
oh, when you get to that, when you get like past the solo and you guys all get into it, it sounds so tight and it sounds, it sounds very tight and it sounds very rocky, you know, like rock and roll. Like
it rocks.
It's a just, great fucking song.
It kind of stomps and but then it gets really mellow. It just has really, really good dynamic. And,
yeah,
I can tell you, like, whenever I put it on a set list, we don't really start with it because, it doesn't, you know, sometimes songs with like kind of a very mellow lead in, it's not such a good idea, but you can sort of stick it, after anything kind of noisy. And then people can sort of like return to like sort of a serene vibe and then,
gotcha.
And then after a certain period of time, it kicks back in again. So, I just love, I love that song and it's always a pleasure to put it on a list and see it coming up. And, in fact, depending on who I'm talking to, if they've never heard Pavement before, and I sort of get a general idea that they like rock music, then it's a song that I would almost play first, to sort of, you know, give them a feel. And then when I do play Transport as a Range, they're like, oh, okay, like, yeah, like 90s college rock or something. And
which it's is fair special. Enough. It's I more mean, special than that, but I hear you.
Yeah, no, but I'm talking about complete nubiles. They, because if you play them something too cute or, I mean, obviously, you know, I'm in the horse racing profession and there's a lot of people that you play Father to a Sister of Thought and Range Life and other sort of country tinge songs because they, you know, would absolutely, I mean, there's a lot of people I know, a lot of my friends who know of Pavement don't like Pavement because it, to them, it sounds too harsh. You know, because a lot of people don't really have any punk rock background.
Right. Okay.
They don't want to hear anything like Unfair or Serpentine Pad, or they don't want to hear anything medium fire, low fire, like Debris Slide or Forklift. I mean, like something like Forklift just sounds like 13-year-olds making a horrible racket. to them, like they don't see the cool in that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and of course, I mean, I haven't listened to it on vinyl in a long time, but Forklift, you know, I remember it sounding kind of maniacal and frenzied in a very 1990s sort of way, which was kind of cool. I can understand. But Transport as a Range kind of ticks all the boxes. Like Grounded would sound like kind of like too much like a stoner type thing to people. Shady Lane might sound kind of like listless. Summer Babes kind of repetitive, and some people might think like, oh, you guys wanted to be Nirvana or something, which we certainly did not. That didn't look like much fun to me. And but yeah, no, I just love the song, and I think that it should definitely not be a forgotten song. Transport as a Range, I think it should be sort of at the forefront of anybody making a mixtape or a tape of 10 to 15 Pavement songs.
I like that. Yeah, it stands up. So then you would say on the countdown, it's underrated at 33, right?
Yeah, and for me, it would always be in my top five.
Top five. Holy shit, Bob.
That's yeah, cool. It would be in my top five. Unquestionably top 10, but probably top five. And in fact, people ask, you know, sometimes like, you know, one lazy question by anybody who's like, what's your actual favorite Pavement song? And, you know, when you say Transport is a Range, you're not being entirely obvious. And then if they've only heard 10 Pavement songs or 15 Pavement songs or just the hits, or then you're kind of forcing them to listen to a great Pavement song that they may have not heard before. So it would unquestionably be in my top five. It's under 4 minutes. I mean, I really am very much of the, you know, when it comes to a band that's a rock band in sort of the 3 minute form like Pavement is. I mean, you know, my general belief, maybe it has to do with attention span or something like that, but songs over 5 minutes better be pretty awesome for you to justify them being that long.
Agree. Totally agree. It's a little pretentious, right?
There's so many great bands who have made so many great songs, and they just fall prey to loving their groove so hard that they do it one or two passes too many, and a song that might have had, like, you know, major appeal, whether it be like sort of from a Venom sense or from a Sweetness sense, is just loses its effect if it's got too much length. So I think it weighs in under 4 minutes. I think it, you know, it's, I think it's 4 minutes are justified. I don't think there's any wasted motion. I think it's got good dynamics. And again, one of Malkmus's best sets of lyrics, you know, and I think, you know, obviously David and Stephen were both very good lyricists, and, you know, David's a poet. He was celebrated for it. And I think that David, you know, was an influence on Stephen and sort of challenged him from a lyric writing perspective, and would get annoyed when Stephen was being too lazy about lyrics. And I think very much in, you know, the Stephen sense, it's a unusually or just a very good set of lyrics from a lyricist who had at that point very much found his way. You know, something that had been sort of a discardable aspect of the band, even to an extent through a lot of Slanted and Shannon. And then, you know, I mean, some people think that his lyrics are just garbled nonsense, and to an extent, you know, by intent, they are, you know, fairly senseless. But I mean, you know, I think of songs like this song, and from a completely different era, lyrics like Trigger Cut. I just think that, you know, he does not get the he gets the respect he deserves as a guitar player, but perhaps not as a lyricist. And I think, you know, Transporter's Range has both.
Yeah, hard agree. Totally agree. What is the whole Pillars of Eight thing? Do you have any insight on that?
What's that?
The Pillars of Eight. Do you have any insight on that?
No, no. No, I don't really have anything of that. I think it probably has to do with you know, then you're falling into him. And I think you've probably seen some of his scrawlings and notebooks and stuff like that. You fall into him choosing expressions and just simply sort of loving words and how they look and how they sound coming out of his mouth. And then, so then using, you know, a set of words like Pillars of Eight and putting in a place where it's going to fit, you know, obviously
gotcha.
That, you know, eight rhymes with a lot of things and fit, you know what I'm saying? So,
yeah, yeah.
You know, he's, when you're in a situation where not only are you going to have to write lyrics, but you're going to also have them analyzed, then I think that you force yourself to, you know, put a certain amount of time into that process. And I think throughout the course of, you know, his entire songwriting history, I think, you know, perhaps it's a bit freeing since Pavement ended that things are a little bit less under the microscope. But certainly in 1997, they, you know, were very much under the microscope. In fact, This album, I remember getting really slammed by a writer in a major music publication for the lyrics in Blue Hawaiian.
Really?
They were actually misconstrued as sexist in this, particularly the line, "The slap is a gift, your cheeks have lost their luster."
Oh my God. I would have never put that together. I would have never got there from that, you know?
"This slap is a gift." I mean, in some ways, like, you could see how the journalist made that point, I suppose. But I mean, like you, I never really thought along those lines, because maybe if you know the person and you know that they're not like a misogynist creep, then you don't even really think about them in that context. But perhaps that person did. And I just remember, you know, when you write songs, which I don't do, then you are just like any type of writer, you are susceptible to criticism. And then, you know, then of course you've reached a certain mantle when your lyrics are being picked apart and every picayune detail is being brought to the fore. But that's like also a compliment that people, you know, care that much about what you write.
That's yeah.
But it, you know, at the same time, like, you know, some things that are almost like unfathomable to a songwriter, come to the fore when people go over them with a fine tooth comb. No, I've never really heard anybody moan about Bright in the Corners lyrics. And, you know, maybe it's because it is like in the 30s. but I really don't think it should be a forgotten song. I think that in some ways it's as good as late period. And when I say late period, I would say albums 4 and 5. It's, you know, as good as Pavement was in terms of sounding like Pavement. I mean, there isn't much of Terror Twilight, which can be described as sort of typically Pavement. But there is on Bright in the Corners, and you definitely cannot describe a song like Stereo as typically Pavement. Pleasure talking about one of my favorite Pavement songs, Jamie.
Bob, it's been a pleasure talking to you, period. It always is.
Anytime, man. I'm basically just basking in the glorious winter sunlight here in Paris, Tennessee.
That's spectacular.
Yeah, with my unmade bed. And I don't even know what I'm going to do. Yeah, I actually have to go grocery shopping. But yeah, pleasure talking to you, and good luck with all of your endeavors. And let me know if you need anything more from me.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
And always, you know, shall I remind you again that Steve West will probably be, you know, gladly help you out.
Oh, I'll ask him.
Yeah. He'll definitely do it.
Cool. So, yeah.
I'll hook you up with Rebecca if you want her to do one.
It would be cool. That would be really cool, because then I could ask her that question that you planted in my head.
Yeah, it'd be really good, actually, because then you'd be the first prominent music journalist to tackle that question.
Yes.
Anyways, love you, mate, and have a great Canadian afternoon, and I'll pass on. You've got all of Wes' information, right?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, I'll pass on Rebecca's.
Cool. All right.
All right, take care of yourself and keep on flying the flag.
You betcha.
All right, cool. Enjoy yourself. Thanks. My pleasure.
One more thing. Wash your goddamn hands.
Thanks for listening to Meeting Malcolmus, a Pavement podcast, where we count down the top 50 Pavement tracks, as selected by you. If you've got questions or concerns, please shoot me an email, jd@meetingmalcolmus.com.
Podcasts and such.